Are you scouring the web for the best Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals? Stop it. Get Rakuten. Rakuten is a shopping sidekick that gets you cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. Right now, you can get up to 15% cash back at the stores you love. You can even stack cash back on top of the biggest sales of the year. That's savings on savings. It's more time shopping and less time searching. With Rakuten, you're always saving at your favorite stores on the things you're already buying. Cash back is automatically added to your account as you shop, and you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Now's the time to join. Up to 15% cash back ends on 12/2. Plus, new members will receive a welcome bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hey, welcome back, ladies. You have landed on episode 105, which is my chat with Sarah Haggerty. Sarah is a mom of six who is learning to see God's thread woven throughout her middle moments. She just released a book called Unseen, and it is really changing a lot of things for me. You'll notice in this episode, I talk about how amazing I think the book is, and I guarantee you, I'm not just saying that because I was talking to the author. I love, love this book. Before we start, though, I want to thank Megan of New Eve Jewelry for sponsoring this episode. She was my guest on episode 102, so make sure you go back and listen to that one. But Megan takes old things and gives them new purpose to remind her wearers and herself that the minute we run back to God, that is exactly what happens to us, too. God is a God who restores. So I love her jewelry because it is such a great reminder. I have one of her pieces and it's a bullet shell and I just love it. It's gorgeous. It's a great way to start a conversation with somebody. She just released a new collection. So go to newevejewelry.com and take a look at all her beautiful stuff and get yourself a reminder of your restoration today. So I have a quick request for you guys. If you haven't already, go ahead and make sure you've subscribed to the show and left a review on iTunes. Those things really help. So Apple has like a super secret algorithm. Nobody exactly knows what causes rankings to happen. But the more subscribers and five-star reviews you have, the more they will show the podcast to other moms who might really be benefiting from what my guests share. So please do that if you haven't. And thank you for all of you who have helped out in this way. All right, ladies, let's get started on my chat with Sarah. Okay, so where do you live?
Kansas City. And where are you?
Dallas, Texas.
Okay. You're a short plane flight. Are you going to be at Declare?
I am. Are you?
Yes, I am.
How exciting. Well, yeah, I am actually speaking. I'm the MC of Declare.
Oh, you are.
I am. And then I'm also doing their talk on podcasting and why you should care about it. Well, I can't wait to meet you. I love this book.
Oh, thank you.
I guess we're just starting with our conversation. But I got to tell you, I get a lot of books in the mail, Sarah. But even the title, The Gift of Being Hidden in a World That Loves to Be Noticed, it just was like something I was like, I don't want to read it because I exactly need this. You know, it's not a lot of books can be convicting in the tagline. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, convicting. That wasn't my intention. But if that is what it is.
Well, no. I mean, what was the intent? I mean, because I feel like if you're striving for that, that's exactly what you need. You know, it's that heart check.
I think our hope with it, and the title was so interesting because it really was such a team effort. And I am not used to creating on a team. I like to write and then work real closely with my editor. Okay. But the title and the tagline, it really was a team effort. And as it came out, I just felt like it was so reaching. Like, I mean, I can't tell you the number of people who just read the title and go, oh,
yes,
that's me. Because I think so many people can identify with feeling hidden in a way that maybe we wouldn't have 20 years ago. But because the way our culture is and social media, I think we think everybody thinks that they feel like they're famous and seen. But I think the reality is actually that most people feel like they're not seen
yes.
and not famous enough.
Yes. It really is hard when
I know it used to be the number that you would measure yourself by is like the number on the scale or maybe how much was in the bank account. But now there's like a gajillion numbers you could measure yourself by.
And that, yes, it feels like the ruler's just within such a close reach. I mean, any minute you can pick up your phone and have a measurement against yourself.
Yeah, it's hard. Okay, so we were gonna do this a couple weeks ago, and I was stuck at a counseling session that went like an hour and a half long. I was like,
which I so appreciated you just saying that, because I feel like, wow, this is a girl who knows how to take care of her heart.
I do, just not my schedule. But in my defense, what kind of counselor goes that much longer? I was sure she was watching the clock.
That has not been my experience with counseling.
No. Yeah. But anyway, it was fantastic. And we really covered a lot of ground, obviously. But anyway, I appreciate your grace for me being like, oh, whoopsies, I totally missed our interview. But what I love is that since then, I got to read all the book, and my questions are completely different now. So I think it's going to be way better and different. So tell us about your family. It's built in an unconventional way. And so let's just start there.
Well, after we were married for 8 years, my husband and I adopted our first two children from Ethiopia. We had started the adoption process. We lived with a family a couple years after we were married. We were building a house and living with a family on their farm while our house was being built in order to save money. And they had adopted some children. Okay. And seeing their melded family, the two of us kind of like quietly at night, you know, we're living in this little a cottage attached to their house. We're like, do you think this could be us? Okay. And this was before, I mean, they were the only family we knew that had adopted. This was before any big adoption rush. It really was not a common thing.
Okay.
But both of us on that farm felt like, oh, I think we actually might be living here for this summer to kind of get a glimpse into adoption.
Okay.
And we didn't know that we'd struggle with infertility. Well, many years later, struggling with infertility, still had a heart for adoption. And we adopted our first two children from Ethiopia and thought that would be it. And I didn't envision us adopting again.
Okay.
But while we were in Ethiopia, one of the girls toured us around the orphanage where our children were, and she was older. And it was clear that she had done this like many times, touring the families around who had come to get their babies. And she just had this look in her eyes that said, take me home.
Hmm.
And
the guide was.
And I knew that the likelihood of her getting adopted was slim. And so we came back from Ethiopia and I looked at my husband and I said, we have to go back.
So she was the guide, but she was also an orphan?
Uh-huh. She was. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. And so hold it. So she's the oldest one.
Well, so it wasn't actually her that we went back for. We went back 2 years later and adopted two older girls from Uganda.
Okay.
So our first four children in 2 years. I mean, we blinked and had four children from Africa.
Okay.
And then after several years after that, I mean, we've been married 12, 13 years, I conceived. And
Unexpectedly.
Though we were very hopeful that that would happen and had our biological son, who's now three. And then I also have a daughter who's 7 months. So we've got, you know, teenager, and I have a baby.
Wow.
Kind of crazy.
Okay, so talk to me about, my husband and I were never able to get pregnant. And we tried for about 6 years and tried a couple different treatments and stuff. But the more the buildup was that this one was going to work, the harder the fall was when it didn't.
Oh my goodness, I so relate.
Yeah, I remember like trying to have, we were having our third IUI. And we were living in China, so we were coming home on the summers and just, because there's not that many fertility treatments in rural China in the rice paddies. So I couldn't just find one anyway. And so I just remember laying on that table the third time and saying, like, I'm jumping off a taller building every single time. Like, I can't. The procedure was happening and I was just crying and telling my husband, we're not doing this again. Like, this is just too hard.
Yeah.
But in that time, God was building our heart for adoption. But so when we adopted my two kids, I didn't feel in any way like I needed to be pregnant anymore. And I think some women don't feel like they should let themselves want to still be pregnant once they've adopted kids. So I love that you still had hope that you would get pregnant. You
know? Yes. In my mind, the way that I saw it wasn't so much that I was like longing for this child who looked like me. In fact, quite the opposite. It's funny because I wrote that in my first book, Every Bitter Thing is Sweet. I wasn't longing for this child who looked like me. And somewhere along the editorial process, one of my editors said, one of your biological kids might read this one day and be hurt. And I was thinking, I don't think so. I'll tell them. It wasn't, I mean, it's great that they look like me, but that wasn't really my heart's desire. It was more so, it was an internal wrestle for me in terms of seeing God as a healer and wanting to believe that he could heal me. But I could fully identify with this man. My children who are adopted, they are my own. I mean, they have my characteristics. They have my loves. They have my passions. It's crazy. As you know, you watch the way God forms a family. It doesn't need to have physical blood tying you together to draw these similarities. And so it wasn't so much that I thought I need to have a biological child because I want to see a kid with my eyes. It was more so just a personal wrestle with God.
Interesting.
It's sweet because people ask now, I actually feel a fiercer attachment in some ways at times to my children who are adopted just because we fought so hard for that.
Yeah. Adoption is so incredibly intricate. So many feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So many feelings. I have my daughter is not super fussed either way about knowing her birth family. And I'm always like, hey, do you think about this? Do you think about that? Like, would you like to know, you know, talk to your birth mom? She goes, I never think about it till you bring it up. I'm like, okay. Well, then my son, though, he's 5 and he's constantly talking about his birth parents, and he has a closed adoption and the daughter has an open adoption. And so it's like, oh, could we switch these situations around?
I think sometimes people see adoption in this like unique category of issues or craziness, or I don't know, but I oftentimes say, you know, the issues that I see in my children's hearts are actually not that different than mine.
Yeah.
And my husband at one point in time, several years ago, we were facing something with one of our children and we're laying in bed at night and he says to me, she's not that different than you. I feel like when we were married, these were some of the same things you were wrestling through.
Wow, that's a great perspective. Because there could be so much fear that goes in and you go, oh my gosh, they're messed up or something, you know?
That's exactly. And I think it actually, sadly, is a deterrent for many people because they see it in this separate category. We are human and humanity can morph itself into some pretty ugly stuff from sin and brokenness. And he's the same healer and restorer for my children who've been adopted that he is for me.
I love that. Yes. So in the book, you talk about there's always two stories in a person, the visible one and the invisible one. And the only one set of eyes sees both. And I loved that, especially with my daughter, I think, because she was older when we adopted her. And so much of what happened in her life, I don't know about. And she doesn't know about. And I always I don't ask her all the time. And I'm like, do you have any memories before? You know, I just want to know, like, did anything pop up? Because I'm just curious. But so when you said that your daughter's life before she came to live with you wasn't lost, it was hidden. Talk to me about that. That was really kind of healing for me because it does feel lost and you can't get it back. And so encourage a mom who feels like there's part of her story with her kids or in her life that is lost as opposed to hidden because they're very different.
Well, I think it's easy for me to see in my children, maybe a little harder, a little more masked in my own life. But I think we can all identify with this notion that if someone sees it, it happened. And if they didn't, then maybe it didn't happen or it wasn't valid. Or if it wasn't seen by human eyes, then does it somehow carry a different worth than what other people can see? Yeah. And what I've seen in my own children, you know, I think of baby showers. I always feel a unique ache when I go to a baby shower. And there's talk of even the baby years and the stories that come up around a baby shower, because I think of the times that I haven't had with my children who are adopted. Mm-hmm. They are, but my husband always corrects me. They were, it's a one-time thing. They were once adopted.
That's good.
But I think about, you know, what I didn't have with them. In some senses, it can feel like this massive black hole. Like, where are those years? But the truth is God saw every minute of that.
Yeah.
And I do believe he can bring those memories back to us. But I also think there are some things that we won't even know the fullness of until we get to the other side and we realize his eyes were on us the whole time.
Yeah.
I think our culture continues to foster. And, you know, I had a friend who said once, if we don't post it online, did it even happen? I think in some ways our culture, because there's so much access to telling people about ourselves and telling and showing people about our lives, almost fosters this understanding that we need to have eyes on us in order to be validated. Yet you look at scripture and he is in Matthew 6, it says he's the father who sees in secret.
Yeah.
The secret and the hidden places are actually the places he ordained to have his eyes on us when no one is looking. We just haven't learned to value them.
We don't. And do you think we did before social media? Do you feel like that's where the big shift is? Or is it just something in us from the beginning?
You know, it's a good question. I think social media is like pouring fuel on a fire.
Okay.
I feel like we as humans already had this sinful, we've already warped. I wouldn't say our desire to be seen and known and validated is from God. You look at Psalm 139, all of it. He knows our thoughts. He formed us in secret. We were made in secret. He saw us in the womb. That's how God created us, to be seen and to be known, but then add sinful flesh. And we then take that craving to man, and we want man to validate us, and we want man to see us. Well, then you add social media, and it is a little bit of fuel, because we actually can have man see us, whereas maybe 50 years ago, there was no such thing as mundane. We didn't even call it that, because that was life.
True.
But here now we have a name for it, because there is the difference between something powerful, and I say that in quotations, or impactful versus everyday. We distinguish because of social media.
That's true. I'm going to read you some of your book, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Just, you said that you vaguely understood that greatness has something to do with internal growth as well as outward accomplishments, but mostly what you considered growth could be measured. And so if it couldn't be measured, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. So for a mom who is, like we're talking about, there's so much hidden stuff happening, especially with moms of young kids. But also we all have hidden places. We're caring for aging parents, or, you know, all the things. There's hidden places. For a mom who's struggling with like, but I want to be great and I'm not great and they're great. And how would you encourage her to find her hidden story?
I think of a story, which actually kind of illustrates it. You know, I'm walking up the stairs and I'm bringing laundry up the stairs, and I'm noticing in the laundry pile that a lot of the clothes that were in there were also in there the day before and possibly the day before that. I'm realizing the strategy of my children to put their clothes right back in the laundry.
Oh, man.
You know, and I'm feeling really grumpy, and I'm going, you know, this is noon and my husband isn't going to be home till 5 or 6. Like, these are completely unseen minutes, and I'm feeling frustrated and like I want to climb out of this and I want to get to a place where when things are easier, they run more smoothly, they run on time. They put their clean clothes away. When will that happen? And at the same time, I hear Psalm 139 ringing in my head. Oh, Lord, you have searched me and you know me. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm going up the stairs, he sees this moment and this isn't a waste. And this, I want to climb my way out of it. I mean, climb is generous. I want to claw my way out of this. I despise this, but he sees it and there's purpose in it. I think if we measured the unseen minutes of our day, it's actually like a large percentage of our life. And yet somehow I think we have our eyes angled on the times where we're visibly making an impact, where we're productive, where we're seen, where we're known. And we put our emphasis there such that we resent this other time. We just kind of can't wait to get through it, to get to the real work of God. And yet I would say to that mom, I think there's an invitation in the, what I would call the middle minutes, the times that seem like they don't make an impact or don't matter. I actually would say that those could be the minutes where God is inviting you to find him and to find him looking at you there.
Okay, so let me just ask practically, do we say, Lord, where are you in the laundry? You mentioned that we don't want to be vulnerable with God. And so sometimes we want to hide when we're mad about the laundry. And then we think, I shouldn't be mad. They're only little. They're new here on earth. You know, whatever. We want to feel bad about being mad. So then we hide from God, right? Like Adam and Eve, like we just want to hide. So you mentioned in the book that sometimes we avoid vulnerability with God because when we've been vulnerable with people, it really hasn't gone that well.
Yes.
So an invitation to say, you know, you're seen when really you don't want to be seen having a bad attitude about your housework or whatever. How would you help somebody to get to that vulnerable place?
I think there's maybe three things. The first is, I think some of it's a perspective shift. Many of us were raised, or in our Christian life, we're raised under the understanding of like the 30-minute quiet time or the morning quiet time, which I think is a beautiful thing. I love.
Is it not in the Bible that it has to be 30 minutes?
You know, really. And where is the word quiet time in the Bible?
Exactly.
but, you know, and I think that's beautiful. And I feel like my day doesn't start well if I don't start it with God's word. But I think in some respects, that perspective has also bled into the rest of life, as if we just spend time with in God's word. When it's quiet, there's a candle lit, the whole house is quiet.
Clean.
And not that he actually can intersect with us during the day. That's the first thing. The second is, I think if we're honest, most of us don't really believe he likes us.
Yes.
And so when you think of God as kind of an extension of yourself, constantly frustrated with you, wishing that you were living a better life or doing a better job, or just stop sinning, please. Yes. When you think of him from that perspective, it's actually, it's difficult to have conversation with him. Who wants to talk to that kind of God? And so during the day, we just get all up in our heads, or we kind of occupy our time with the escape of the phone in our hand or whatever it is, because we don't actually believe that he delivers us because he delights in us. Psalm 18 says.
Can I just share a very strange, not strange, it was a moment that I had with God that is very rare. This doesn't happen a lot, but, and you even kind of mentioned it, where you'll be praying or you'll be just talking to him and something will get inside your head and you're like, I didn't put that there. That was God. You know what I mean? And so the other day, I was reading this book. It's like a little pamphlet, and it's called My Heart, Christ's Home. And it kind of goes through.
Oh, yeah. I read it a long time ago.
Yes. It's not new at all. So just for the listener, it kind of just goes through the parts of a house as if that was the heart where Christ lived. So there's the mind of the house, and the man is in there and he sees that Jesus is in his mind, and he's feeling a little embarrassed about like the posters on the wall. And so I thought, well, I mean, Lord, what's on the wall in my mind? Because it's not like I got naked lady pictures up there. Like a guy might be like, oh, things aren't clean in here or whatever. So I'm like, what's on my walls? And I looked, and I wasn't trying to be like, wasn't trying to see stuff. And I a lot of times just say, well, God's not going to talk to me. I'm not that imaginative. Like, it's not going to be this amazing. Like, I have a friend who's like, oh, I dance with Jesus in my mind. I'm like, for reals? Like, I didn't know Jesus knew how to dance. So I think that for me, I just was like, well, Lord, you know, what's on the walls? Kind of half thinking, I'm not going to hear anything, you know, whatever. And I looked, and it was a picture of Jesus, all painted, beautiful purple robes, but he looked so mad at me, like so disappointed. And there was actually two. There was a second picture, and it was of his back. Like, you know, his arms are open wide, but not this homie. Like, this guy was mad and turned around. And I was like, whoa, it was very powerful to me. Like you're saying, like, I don't really think he likes me. I think he should like me because that's like the right thing to do, but he doesn't really like me. And so I thought, well, okay, Lord, like I do feel like that's accurate of what I think, but I didn't realize that was on the walls of my mind. And so I said, well, you know, we should probably take those down. And I went to like take them. They were like posters. I think I should imagine like framed, beautiful, matted pictures. But in my mind, I took some posters up with some scotch tape. I'm not that classy. Anyway, college. And so, yeah, it's a college dorm. And I was going to roll, because I knew, I was imagining this, so I knew what I was going to do was roll it up, you know, like take it down and roll it up. And he took it and ripped it in half and put it in a fireplace. And I'm like, dude, like, I didn't make that up. I didn't think of that. And so I just think that, yes, he cares so much that we actually look at what we think of him and what we think he thinks of us, because it changes everything.
And from a practical perspective, I mean, study the emotions of God's heart in the Word of God. I'm not saying you study, but I mean, any of us.
Yeah.
He's an emotional God. Emotional, not in the sense of that we think of like hormonal, but like he is.
He can't so good.
He has emotions towards us. And I think in so many ways, we just project what we think of ourselves onto him, and we don't actually apply his word to him.
Yeah.
I kind of loosely referenced it, but didn't use the word. We do a little habit in our home called adoration. Yes. It is actually just using God's word and putting it in our mouth and saying it back to God. For my kids, it's profound, even though we don't necessarily see the implications yet, but we know that they've got years of history leading them to believe things that aren't true about God because of their pain. But my husband and I have that too, right? And so one night in particular, I was doing adoration with my daughter in a way that worked for her. She's an artist. And so I knew she was really struggling with a lot of shame, which is typical for a lot of kids who were once orphaned.
Okay.
And so I had her hand lettering Psalm 18:19, which is, he delivered me because he delighted in me. I mean, all the other kids, she's up later and she's hand lettering it. Because I know that that's even going to be more powerful to her than us like sitting down and actually praying. But I'm like, sweetheart, let's adore God through this. And I can tell she's like, it's not connecting with her. And so I just started saying to her, you know, it's not just that he delights in you. He likes you.
Mm-hmm.
He likes it when you ride your bike in the snow. He likes it when you wear your rain boots and your bathing suit outside. Mm-hmm. And she's you know, she's a quirky kid, right? He likes it when you sing really loud in the shower and you don't know that the rest of us hear it, or you dance while you're doing the dishes, because she's kind of my introvert kid, and you think none of us see you. You know, all the kind of quirky things about her that she actually really likes about her, I was pointing out, likes these things, and I see this like smile come onto her face. Like she's kind of, it's humorous to her that God actually notices those things and enjoys them about her. So she looked at me and she said, Mommy, at that time she called me Mommy, Mommy, do you think that I'm the only person on the planet who has a hard time believing that God likes me?
Oh my goodness. No, girlfriend.
Yeah. I said, you and the rest of humanity.
Yeah.
Like if we could just see his kind eyes toward us.
Yeah.
I think of a girlfriend. One of my roommates in college loved, she drove an old Land Rover, and I'm not a car person, but I know that Land Rovers are kind of a thing, like the year and the.
Okay.
Where Land Rover people like really love their Land Rovers.
Okay.
And she would say, you know, when we're all like in college and dreaming about who we're going to marry, she would say she wanted somebody who like totally appreciated that when she was in high school, she drove this beat up Land Rover to
okay.
high school. And it's stuck with me ever since, because I think, you know, as I got older and like kind of wrestled with the nature of God as one who delights in me and likes me, I thought that's actually God to her. Like he loved that quirky side of her, that beat up old Land Rover. You know, we want that in the husband, but that's an extension of who God is. We just have a hard time getting there in our minds. We think like the picture that you saw on the wall, that he's like mostly irritated, mostly frustrated, and wishing we would just get our acts together.
But he's there because it's the right thing to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so to go back to, you know, I said three things. The third thing, you know, if we start to actually engage with how many lies are in our mind about how God actually sees us, I think then the third thing is when we want to then have white space in our lives. Mm-hmm. We want to then have times where we're not just impacting the world or being productive or filling our time with, you know, checking up on what everyone else in our life is doing because we can see it online. We actually want to talk to him, because when we start to discover his kind eyes on us, who doesn't want to spend time with that kind of God?
And I have experienced that. It has gone from, why is this not quote unquote working? I spent 30 minutes this morning. You know, like I would tell my husband, Christianity does not work. Like I believe in Jesus. All of these things. I've been a Christian since I was 16, but this is not working. Well, it's because I was using the 30-minute act of reading a book, reading the Bible, to be that was the thing. But now that I am really becoming acquainted with the Lord and, like you said, his kind eyes on us, I can get out of bed really early. Like, I want to get to spend time with him. I thought people were weird when they said that before, and now I'm the weird one. It's okay.
I was thinking yesterday, John the Baptist was so weird, and yet I think it's him that was called the friend of the bridegroom. You know, like we have this notion of Christianity that is so sanitized, and yet I think that there's a kind of a wild invitation to a love that is weird and unconventional, but like so much better of a roller coaster ride than just putting Jesus juice on our day.
I know it. Gosh. I think you quoted somebody, I don't know who, but the brokenness is the antidote to shame. And so often we want to hide from God. We want to hide from others. That's why we want to only show the great parts, because we're so ashamed.
Yes.
How do we get to the point where we're okay with our brokenness? How does that become the antidote to shame?
That's actually Tremper Longman and Dan Allender in a book. I think that's the one, that Cry of the Soul, which is a book published in like 1980 about the Psalms, that is one of my all-time favorite books. But I might even rephrase their words to say not just brokenness, but like the awkward discomfort before God, bareness before God is the antidote to shame. I think shame causes us to move in a cycle where we just kind of keep reacting and responding. There's not a whole lot of thought in it. It's more reactive.
Yeah.
I think when we slow our lives down, you know, I think of our Sabbath. So we take a day of the week to rest, and there's not a legalism about it. I'm still changing laundry and I still have to cook for my kids to some degree. So it's not like the lights are off in our house or anything like that.
Yeah.
But we do like intentionally make that a very unproductive day.
Okay.
And I typically find that by midday, I'm feeling a little restless and uncomfortable. And I think part of what the Sabbath exposes to me is that I oftentimes can mask myself behind my productivity and my success or my impact, whatever that is.
Yeah.
you know, and that is a place of shame. Like, I feel shame in who I really am unless I can come to God showing him something for myself. Absolutely. But I think we can sow in the opposite direction and say, I'm actually going to come bare before you, God. I'm going to come vulnerable. I'm going to come at the place where I'm feeling discomfort instead of running to an escape. I'm going to sit before you and say, tell me what you really think about me right now.
Yeah, like you talked about wasting time with God. I love it.
Yeah.
What is different about your relationship with him and or you as a person when you get pushed past the really uncomfortable place of feeling like, but I'm not doing enough? Like, how are you different now?
I mean, now as a person, but and even in the pockets of my day where I do that, I am so much more settled. Okay. I feel like I used to look at the women who were older, maybe 10, 20 years older than me, and there was a settledness to them, mm-hmm. many of them. I mean, not everybody fall in this category, but ones who were really, from my perspective, pressing into who God was mm-hmm. and who he was in their lives. There was like a peace about them that you would watch life kind of come at them, and they were unshaken to some degree. And I find that happening in my own life where I feel like there's a lot of chaos rising up. I mean, I have 6 kids and even, you know, I'm in the middle of releasing a book right now. There could be a whole lot of commentary from the world around me that if I let it would inform my thinking and probably cause some stress and anxiety and even fear on the inside. But if I stay in that place of God, the only thing that matters is your eyes on me. I feel so deeply at peace. It's not to say that I'm there every day and like in this forever state of peace. There's definitely an everyday wrestle to get there. But for the first time, I would say over the past few years in my life, I can actually see that there's a there.
Okay.
Like there actually is a place of peace that is accessible in him.
Yeah. I think sometimes I tell myself like that's for other people or that's for other personalities or that's for, yeah. you know, but that's a lie.
It's totally a lie. I think me too. I thought that's for the monks, you know, that's for the ones who are real contemplative types. Well, I have 6 kids. I can't possibly do or be that. But it is, you know, his word tells us like, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God. But the other part of that is then the peace of God, which goes beyond our understanding, yeah. will guard your heart and your mind in Christ Jesus. And I think that's accessible to me at any point in the day.
Absolutely.
When I have 6 kids and 2 of them need diaper changes and somebody's having a heart issue and 2 others are fighting in the other room. Even at that moment, if I believe his word, his peace can really flood me.
Yeah. And the enemy of our souls would want us to believe that it's just a personality thing or a life stage thing.
Yes. Life. Yeah, exactly. Like when my kids are launched, then I'm going to find peace.
Yeah. Nope. Okay. So talk to me. I have a couple questions just practically. Kids and Sabbath. That many kids having an unproductive day. I'm nervous for you. How do you manage?
Well, I don't know what it would look like if we did this with a bunch of little kids. But, you know, I've got 13, 2 almost 12-year-olds and an almost 10-year-old. And they actually have grown to love Sabbath. We did it this past spring. My son was playing lacrosse and their games were Saturday mornings. So we had to like switch our Sabbath to Sunday afternoons after church, after we already did the fire drill to church. It just did not feel restful. And the kids were like, when's Caleb going to be done with lacrosse? We got to get back to Sabbath. So they love it. They literally stay in their pajamas for most of the day. They cook their own breakfast, like just have a fun, like, I mean, they craft all sorts of crazy food contraptions in the kitchen.
Okay.
Sometimes we'll, like in the winters, we'll do like everybody gathers around the fire at noon and we'll may have some kind of like baked good and tea. It sounds very esoteric. It's usually somebody's like elbowing somebody else and there's, you know, kids read books and they, our property backs up to 2,000 acres of nature preserve. So it sort of makes it easy in the spring for them to just play outside. And we just make life really simple. Now, if I did that with a bunch of littles, it might be total chaos. But because my kids aren't little, they're actually at the age where they can kind of appreciate a day where they have nothing to do.
Yes.
But to like read and do the things that they wouldn't normally do during a crazy, hectic week.
Yes.
I think I'm actually seeing the value. They're receiving the value. They're appreciating it.
So are there like no screens or is that like,
yeah,
how does that look?
We don't do screens. And we actually don't do screens a ton with our kids anyways at this stage in their lives. So it's not a big... That isn't necessarily something that feels so different than during the week.
Okay.
A lot of it is they see Nate and I, like I'm drinking chai and we have a like kind of a long date in the morning. And so they watch us Sabbath. And we both go to the gym and we work out. It's not like we're like, Nate and I are just in our pajamas all day, but they get to watch us spend time catching up on things we wouldn't normally catch up on and like just linger over conversation, which my kids are at that age where they actually appreciate conversation and mm-hmm. have things to say. And it's fun to see that it's actually sticking with them. Like they are, in a sense, we're living African, like where relationship comes first.
That's really neat. I love that. So they're not really pushing back against that. That's good.
No. And when my littles get a little bit older, they may. But, you know, but the ages my kids are at, it's actually perfect.
Okay. What types of things do you have to say no to then to create that kind of margin?
That's a great question. I mean, as my kids are getting older, there's more no's to say, not that we actually say them. For a while, we intentionally didn't do activities that would fall on a Saturday. Okay. So, but then, like I said, Caleb played lacrosse and it landed on a Saturday. So we're not so rigid that we actually like refuse to add anything to that day. But if Saturday isn't birthday party time and it's not gathering together with other families and things that we love to do, because we've found that when we do that on those days, it ends up like the rest of the days just feel like we're kind of pulling our hair out. In a sense, so here's the bigger picture for Sabbath for us. And it's not just the day, but it's also the pockets of time during the rest of the week where we try to build in rest. I feel like when you develop a taste for rest, and not rest unto itself, but rest unto, I really trust that when I'm not producing anything, God still loves me. Mm-hmm. So when you develop a taste for rest, I feel like it's sort of like expanding your palate for fine foods. Ah. You crave a little bit more. And so it's a little less hard to say no to things. It's a little easier for me to say, nope, we're not going to do this birthday party on this day. Okay. Because I actually know it's really good when my family just dials down and it's just us. And it doesn't feel like this. I should say no. It actually feels like, you know what? If I miss this one day a week where I really believe that God sees me in my lack of productivity and enjoys it, it might just taint the way that the rest of my days go.
Hmm. That's really good.
And again, it's not that we're rigid with it. I mean, like this past Saturday, we went school supply shopping. So it's not like we absolutely cannot move anything for that day. But for the most part, we try and keep it pretty simple.
But even if a listener or if I could just take half a day on a Saturday. You know what I mean? So like just to say this 4-hour period is this just the Thomas clan doing nothing.
Yes.
I actually think everybody would like that but me. So maybe I need to grow in this area.
Well, I write about it in my book, but for a period of time, actually a very full period of time, I realized that kind of I was feeling better when I was tasking. Yeah. Like I feel better about myself when I task.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to fight against that in my own heart because I really do believe God does not enjoy us more when we task for him. And so I built in something that I named my wonder hour, kind of a goofy name, but a couple times a week, I'd shut the door, lock it, tell the kids no interruptions. And for an hour, just, it might be my Bible. It might be just reading. It might be a walk outside, but something that's not checking any box where I am sitting quiet with a book in hand, even not producing anything and asking God throughout that time, do you like me any less when I do this? Mm. Teach my heart that you actually don't like me any less when I'm not producing for you.
That's so good. Oh, so did it get easy? How long was it incredibly excruciating?
How you mean in duration or? Oh.
Like how many times did you have to do it?
I still feel like it's hard. We do a Sabbath every week and every Saturday. I still have that feeling like, oh, I got to remember you like me when I'm doing nothing for you.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think human nature is, I don't know that it's ever going to feel completely natural unless we maybe are those monks to rest and believe he enjoys us when we're not producing for him.
Yeah. That's so good. Recently, one of the women's ministry kind of directors at our church, and she couldn't have been more kind, but it was so convicting, and especially to come, and then your book comes in the mail. I'm like, oh my gosh, Lord, I hear you. This is so painful. But she's like, I think that, you know, you seem happy, you are funny, you are doing a lot of things and everything. She goes, there is just some kind of turbulence under the surface that I can sense.
Wow.
And I wanted to talk about that. And I'm like, I felt like literally like I was standing there naked because I'm like, I did not know other people could see that.
Wow. But what an awesome thing that you would have a woman who'd be willing to say that.
Oh, absolutely. And it's made me go, okay, like, let's, like, people can see it, you know. And I think I didn't even realize that it was A, visible, or B, not normal.
Yeah.
Because normal for me, right? And so I just feel like God is really doing something inside of me about this whole topic, obviously. So.
Oh, I love it. Well, and I think that's the gift of having older women in our life is the things we don't see that we think are just a part of our personality. Someone else from the outside can say, I think you could get freedom here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful. So, okay, we are almost out of time. I could talk to you forever about this.
We can chat at Declare.
Okay, I can't wait. It'd be so fun. So what can you not stop talking about right now?
Oh my goodness. What can I not stop talking about right now? So I'm becoming a little bit of a journal snob.
Ew.
And I just found the Barren Fig Confidant. This is serious journaling. Somebody, friends of ours who are also equally into their journals. I don't even know if journal is the right word. Notebook. It's like a sophisticated notebook. I just feel cooler for holding it. Yeah. But it is an awesome gift to give to writers or to people who, you know, like, appreciate a good journal.
Okay, so the Barren Fig.
I don't even think it's the. I think it's just Barren Fig. Barren Fig is the company and the confidant.
Man.
It's great.
So is it leather, or like what makes it so fantastical?
So it lays flat, which is really great. I love my moleskin. I don't know that I will ever get away from like having my very, very favorite journal be the moleskin, but the confidant is a little bit of a step up because it's got this little linen overlay.
No.
I know. You pay for it, but they do run specials.
Okay. Wow. And how did you find out about this?
These friends who are also journal snobs, actually, you know what? I was asking, I think, for a gift idea for my husband for his birthday, and they suggested that. And then I looked into it and I was like, oh, this is going to be a problem. Because you can also buy a subscription to it, which I haven't done yet. But you can.
Oh, wow. So cool.
Yes.
I'm looking that up, ma'am.
So the things I can't stop talking about these days are like all things sort of book and resource geek related. Have you heard of book darts?
What? No.
Okay. They are these little markers that you can slide onto your page and barely see, but you can mark, instead of actually highlighting on the book, you can mark the things. It's kind of like a very thin paperclip, but it's not a paperclip. It actually like marks the passages.
It marks the actual words or just like the top corner or something?
It marks the corners, but you can't see it. When the book is closed, you can barely see them in there, but you'll be able to go back and find the things you want to mark.
Interesting. Book dart.
Yeah. They're not cheap either.
You pay for all these things. Oh, man. Well, those are very interesting.
All research geek related, because it's the beginning of the school year. And don't you feel like if you're going to be buying school supplies for your kids, you need to be buying them for yourself?
You
I mean, isn't half, to. I would say not even half. Most of the fun of school is school supplies.
I used to like name them and pet them. I love my school supplies. Like,
no kidding. So here I am, a grown woman getting my own school supplies.
So good. Well, and we have to have the cute ones. So my kids, I take them to Walmart, but then I need to go to somewhere fancy.
Barren Fig.
I need a Barren Fig in my life. Awesome. Oh, man. Okay. Well, Sarah, so fun. I can't wait to meet you in real life pretty soon.
Yes. Very soon. Thank you for having me.
You are so, so welcome. And thanks for writing this book. It's been a wild ride for me.
I love it.
Welcome back, guys. So listen, I have your first strategy to struggle well. Read this book. If you get it from the show notes at momstrugglingwell.com, it uses the show's affiliate link on Amazon and it kicks a couple pennies back towards the show. So please purchase it that way. But whatever you do, get it. A possible other strategy to struggle well, maybe you love the idea of Sabbath that she had. Well, actually, the idea of Sabbath is God's idea originally. But maybe you start that in your house. I really try to make Sunday after church a Sabbath for us. But since the show releases on Mondays, I kind of slipped into the habit of spending my Sabbath on this show, which means it wasn't a Sabbath. So I'm really happy to announce that this is a Friday, and I'm going to really try to guard the heck out of Sundays in the future. Maybe your strategy to struggle well could be what she talked about, quote, wasting time with God. If that sounds really uncomfortable and kind of worthless and pointless, I'd really encourage you to try it out. Lean into the awkward because I think something really awesome might happen. I loved how Sarah told her little girl how much God loved all her quirky parts, that he made her and that she was just precious to him. So I was just wondering if you could stop and think this week, do you believe God loves all those things about you? We think, or at least I think, my quirks are embarrassing, but other people's are cute. You know what I mean? Or fun. And I just need you to know, and I need me to know, that God thinks that you are cute. So just need to get used to it. Another strategy to struggle well with this week would deal with what Sarah talked about, how God's eyes towards us are kind. I want you to just sit with that. If that kind of makes you squirm, you're on to something. Stay there. Ask him if it's true. Ask him to show you what he thinks of you. He did it for Sarah. He's doing it for me. He'll do it for you. All you got to do is ask.
Don't forget to find the Struggling Well community on Instagram or Facebook at Mom Struggling Well. And especially come on Wednesdays for Struggle Well Wednesdays at both places. On Instagram, it is on the public feed, but on Facebook, we do it in our private Facebook group. You don't want to miss it. The ladies will make you feel better about your motherhood. Promise. They share all the things. Funny, sad, hysterical, scary. So many feelings happen on Wednesday. Okay, ladies. It's been real. Thank you for listening today. I appreciate you so much. And I hope you have a great week of struggling well.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.